another episode. This is Ethan.
This is Nick.
And joining us this week is...
Willow McClay.
Thank you for joining us, Willow, to talk about another hour of Twin Peaks: The Return. But before we get into last night's hour, Willow, as we always ask our guests, what are your thoughts on Twin Peaks: The Return so far?
I'm really in love with it. I've kind of been down on cinema this year. Like, I've been watching a lot of movies, and none of them have really been, like, hitting that spot for me. But Twin Peaks has really been, like, kind of perfect for that. It's been something I've been looking forward to every single week, and I'm really grateful that we have new David Lynch to look forward to. And I really think it's been unlike anything else I've ever seen on television, at the very least. Like, I don't watch a whole lot of television, but, like, this is, like, totally on another level.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I agree on both counts, on it being a show on a whole other level, and also, sadly, the state of cinema in 2017.
Yeah, it hasn't been last year for sure. Mm-hmm.
Only Sandy Wexler, really, so far, has scratched
that. Oh, my God.
Willow, have you seen Sandy Wexler?
I have not seen Sandy Wexler.
Okay, so that leaves Ethan as the lone wolf in this cause.
I'm the Wex head. Well, if we just want to jump into,
I think we should actually just continue this line. It's just fucking... no, please, let's proceed.
Okay, well, hour 12, entitled Let's Rock, aired last night, and, I mean, just to get off on a jumping point, I think I could kind of get a sense that the consensus on this episode is that it was... maybe the people's least favorite episode so far. And re-watching it today, I kind of got the sense that maybe the thing that made people think that way is I feel like the Audrey scene, we should mention Audrey Horne finally returns, the 10-minute scene, I did count it, it is actually 10 minutes long. I feel like it kind of has a lot to do with that leaving a bad taste in people's mouths. I mean, I should just ask both of you, what did you each think of the episode? Do you agree it was the weakest so far? Do you think it was maybe the best so far? Do you agree about the Audrey scene? I'm going to throw it over to you two.
I actually think it's one of the better episodes so far.
Mm. Whoa, all Ooh. Right.
And I'll elaborate why. I think in terms of getting to the central heart of the show with Laura Palmer, I thought that what they did by introducing Sarah Palmer back into the show again, she's appeared a couple of times before, but nothing of great consequence really until this episode. And I thought having her on board in this episode really like reintroduced us to like where this show began, the horror of Twin Peaks, and where the heart of this show is in Laura Palmer's story. And I think that the revival is quite different from like that in terms of tone and everything, but Laura's always been like this figure who casts a shadow over the entirety of the show and in the entirety of Twin Peaks. Like, the entire town was obsessed with her murder mystery and who did it. And so were viewers back in the 1990s. But by giving us like this look at where Sarah Palmer is, I think it like puts us back in the shoes of why Twin Peaks was important to begin with. And just like, in addition to that, I think from a political standpoint, this is a very interesting episode. Because you have this scene where, like the woman that Richard attacked, she doesn't have insurance. And there's also, like, the person whose name that I can't remember, Harry Dean Stanton talks to, he's donating blood just to afford food, basically. And I think that it's Lynch's very sly way of saying that we still need to help each other in these times because things are much, much worse than they have been previously. And with the Audrey scene, I'm going to, like, drop a hot take here. Mm-hmm. I don't think Audrey's a good character. Mm-hmm. I don't think she has been even back to the original show. She's basically all surface. Her initial, like, character arc is not really of interest to me. So I think people were kind of expecting her to play a bigger role in the show or for her return to be more important than it was, but I don't know. To me, it just made sense. I mean, Audrey Horne's always been a letdown.
Oh, wow. Nick?
I would say I agree with a lot of what Willow said, but I also sympathize with what Ethan was insinuating with regards to people's response to the episode and why they may have responded to it that way. We'll get to the Audrey scene, at least my perspective on it, in a second. I will say that for the most part, overall, I liked the episode a decent amount. And I think that this was a good example of how kind of disjunctive the editing rhythms of the show still are. I've talked to some people in recent weeks with regards to the then most recent episodes, and they'd remarked how it had become more linear and in a way more concise in that now you would have characters in a scene concerning a certain narrative and there may actually be a follow-up sequence involving those characters in that narrative, which was starting to feel like a real surprise when you have, for instance, the FBI people on the plane and they make mention of South Dakota and then the next scene is actually them in South Dakota. Whereas the first, 2 to 3 to 4 hours of the show would have been that, and then you might not have returned to it for a whole other episode. But this was kind of getting back into the feeling of a lot of things happening simultaneously and a lot of things running parallel to each other. And the fact that you have this return of Sarah Palmer and what I thought was a really strong scene in a sequence that reminded me quite a bit of the trauma that Laura Palmer undergoes in Firewalk with Me, kind of the world collapsing around her and people not understanding why and the sort of banal everyday thing, the signifiers of doom. In this case, it's beef jerky, which wasn't there before, but now it's there. It's going on. That, to me, was... Yeah, I mean, that all worked fairly well. I guess I found certain patches of it a little duller. I didn't, unfortunately, respond to the Harry Dean Stanton scene the way that Willow did. It felt a bit, even by this show's standards, it felt a bit misplaced to me. I just wasn't quite sure why we were getting this in this sort of grand patchwork that's going on. I like your reading of it, don't get me wrong. In the moment, I was a bit... It felt a bit askew. And I would say that, yeah, I mean, then you have, for instance, Lynch and Berenice Marlowe, who's best known for, I guess, Skyfall and To the Wonder.
Song to Song.
Yes. Olga Kurylenko, Berenice Marlowe. It's hard for me to keep track sometimes. One of the funniest scenes of the series, not just the season, I mean the whole series, a sequence that, even by Lynch's standards, just goes on for so long, this whole process and seeing Gordon Cole being kind of lecherous but also sort of a sweet old man and maybe a bit of both, maybe just one and not the other, and I don't know which one instead of the other, that was all good. And then we get to the Audrey scene, which I wish I could stand up for, especially because I, like Willow, have never really, not that I've not cared much for Audrey, I've never cared much about her, I guess. She always felt to me like a flat character, sort of this femme fatale vixen type who seems like a good fit for the early part of the series, and then what happens with her afterwards sort of always felt kind of rudderless to me. The Billy Zane stuff later on is fun, but it's not. Hell yeah, indeed. But there's been this thing. I mean, I noticed, and maybe the both of you are part of the Twin Peaks meme page on Facebook, but a bunch of people have just been commenting over and over and making posts about where's Audrey, where's Audrey? And my response whenever I see that is, I don't care. We have so much else going on, so many characters from the past who I love, so many new characters who I'm really into. I frankly don't need to see her. I wouldn't mind seeing her, but I don't need to see her. And then it's this long sequence where I think I get the sense of what Lynch and Frost are doing with regards to throwing us into this person's life and this tangled web of names and associations and histories and feelings. And there is a certain relentlessness to it that I admire, but good Lord, I was waiting for that scene to end. It has to be my least favorite scene in the entire series so far. This particular series, not the whole Twin Peaks series necessarily. I even if throwing in like Little Nicky or something might have helped spice up the scene for all I know. I found it really difficult because I just did not care one iota. I also frankly found the way it was directed very boring. It was just a lot of shot reverse shot stuff, and there were silences and glances that Lynch is doing very well, I think particularly doing well in this new season, but for the most part it was just kind of a dead fish on the floor. And then I think that the next sequence, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, actually the last scene of the show in the roadhouse, kind of does a similar thing where it's these two women who I didn't recognize. I don't know if either of you recognize them from earlier in the series, but
Ana no. de la Guerra, who's in Nacho Libre. I recognized her at least as an actress.
As an actress, sure. Character-wise, though, they're saying these other names that are coming up that I don't know, but there's something about that that felt more magnetic. It felt more electric to me.
It's more organic.
More organic, I would say so. It doesn't feel... Yeah, because it's part of a fabric we're seeing. It's the setting we know and a certain tempo we know. The Roadhouse vibe is there, and that sequence works. And that played to me as a more successful version of kind of a similar idea of this mysterious thing. I will say I like the shot introducing Audrey, which is this very weird thing because she just sort of appears. And then the camera pans over to her husband. And there was something very... Yeah, there's something very jarring about that I appreciated. The sequence itself did leave a bad taste in my mouth, and it has hurt my impression of the episode overall, but the rest, I mean, particularly like the last, you know, 3-4 weeks have been so good that, you know, if it has a bad scene somewhere, that's okay. I come up with that. And I thought it was a good episode overall, so.
Yeah, I mean, in regards to the Audrey scene, I will say I think the writing was good. The directing, I think I liked a little more than Nick. I kind of did appreciate actually how distended it was, but I'm going to say this. To be honest, I think Fenn's performance in the scene is terrible.
Okay.
I was actually kind of like, just because I like Audrey more than you, apparently, both of you apparently, but I was kind of genuinely shocked by how bad her performance was in that scene. And especially, I think it hurt comparing it to Zabriskie, who I think even in her one scene, or one of two scenes, the scene with Michael Horace in particular in the Palmer family home, which I think is one of the best acted scenes in the entire series so far. It just did not do it for me. And I don't know if we want to get into gossip. Maybe this isn't the place to do it, but from what I understand, what happened was when Fenn got the script and her proposed paycheck for the show, she actually turned it down because it wasn't enough money. So they wrote her out, but then at the last minute, they found a way to get her back in. They renegotiated or whatever. And I can't help but think of gossip when watching that scene and just how awkward the performances, and I'm not sure. I mean, for all we know, that could be her only scene. Who knows? But overall, I mean, I think Nick, I mean, to move on, actually, I want to say one more point. I do think it would have been funny if her husband was Billy Zane, though. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think that may have actually spiced up the scene a little bit. Something I wanted to mention, actually, too. Friend of the show, Simon Howell, pointed this out on Twitter that, I mean, I think some people are trying to think that the actor Clark Middleton, it's like another, it's another instance of the show of a small person being made fun of. But interesting note that Clark Middleton and Sherilyn Fenn are actually the exact same height. Bring that up. And also, it made me think of how Fenn in real life has dated Prince, who is famously 5'3". So can you imagine if that was Prince in that scene?
Well, it would have certainly been more interesting.
I agree. imagine if he actually came out of acting retirement to do that, and it would have probably been a few months before he passed away. Sad to think.
Wouldn't it have been such a Prince thing, though, to come out of acting retirement to be in Twin Peaks? I mean, over the years, he's done, like, these weird... He did, like, these weird projects every New now Girl. And then. Like, he was on New Girl. He was on, like, this Muppet show in the mid-90s after he had, like, changed his name to The Symbol. Like, Prince being in Twin Peaks isn't the most outrageous thing to, like, consider.
I mean, they already have Bowie, so, you know, I feel like it would... There would be some symbiosis there. This has been a musician-heavy revival, too. God.
I'm just imagining that charging $600 for tickets to see him at the Roadhouse. But, but Nick made a point about the editing, too, kind of to move on from that Audrey scene. Yeah, I think that I feel like the first half of the episode is almost a lot of very clipped scenes. Then the second half is a lot of very extended scenes. Another one of the extended scenes I actually wanted to showcase was the Robert Forster, Richard Boehmer, or I should say the Truman horn scene, which on the rewatch I noticed what a good yin-yang it was between the two actors, where I think that Forster is sort of the ultimate minimalist under actor, I mean that in the best sense possible, and Boehmer is almost the ultimate kind of ticky actor. He's always kind of moving his hands, speaking, like raising and lowering his voice, and the yin and yang in that scene, I think, again, compared to the Audrey scene, which again, both are shot reverse shot, just, or we mentioned the Roadhouse scene, another shot reverse shot sequence, which I again just found a lot more compelling.
I mean, part of it too is I found the Benjamin Horn, Sheriff Truman scene really strong. I think in large part because the sense of history that is hanging over that sequence, not even necessarily between the two men, because there's sort of this implication that they really only know each other in passing, but it's this thing of, obviously, Benjamin Horn knew his brother, and there's kind of this feeling of two old men who are talking about sort of the sins of, you know, it's the father's talking about the sins of the sons in that way. And that to me was, that to me was really fantastic, actually, overall. And I guess I was sort of thinking to myself that kind of just the mood hanging in the air, kind of that, sort of the golden lights and the stillness of the hotel at night, to me was all really effective in that way. And not only that, but there was also the sense of the plot progressing in a really worthwhile way, in a way that I don't think the show has always, or I think has often not felt indebted to fulfill, because here you have this key being brought to Truman, and there's a question of what is he going to do with this? What does this mean? How is this going to lead him along? It very well may not, for all we know, but there are these implications of things that may be happening. And, you know, also just the thing of, again, Michael Unkian's absence is felt on this show, and the way that it comes up there, where even when he seems to say with some assurity that, yes, he would like to have this key, I'm thinking to myself, well, perhaps he wouldn't want that at all. with the history that he has with Cooper, where he was this guy who he was friends with, he trusted, and then he just disappeared under potentially horrifying circumstances. And maybe the brother himself doesn't know that. There are all these unspoken things that I was feeling there that I liked quite a lot that, you know, in another scene involving a horn in this episode I did not get.
I mean, maybe another area where I started maybe to doubt the episode a little was in terms of just a, maybe not a scene that was bad, but just a choice I couldn't quite understand is we get another Dr. Amp scene, and it literally replays most of his shit shoveling commercial. And that was, we saw the return of that character, or that commercial, I should say, or Dr. Amp, two episodes ago, and I thought that it worked as like a good kind of median between the scenes. But here, again, just showing that and then again cutting to Nadine watching him on her monitor is something, a choice I can't quite understand. I'm willing to be patient, and I don't know, it may pay off into something, but
it felt to me like the kind of thing that would seems stronger if you're to watch this as a more continuous piece than as a 1 hour thing. Kind of the sense of returning to it and maybe the rhythm it would create would feel stronger. Mm-hmm. Perhaps.
Yeah, I get the sense that this is like a really hard show to analyze, because I do think that Lynch intends this to be like seen as like one collective thing rather than broken up into episodes. And I think that that is going to cause some fracture here and there that we won't quite understand until we do have the whole picture.
Well, I just wish he'd considered all the podcasts when he structured it that way. But
yeah.
Do we think David Lynch even listens to podcasts?
Actually, he does. He brought this up. I can't remember. Maybe it was Entertainment Weekly he was interviewed with. He said he even wants, he's thinking about for his next project to do a podcast, I believe. But I think he said he even just wanted it to be like ambient noises or whatever. So
is he a
great? That would be amazing.
I'm kind of shocked he hasn't gone on Marc Maron to promote the return, honestly. I was kind of expecting that for the first half of the year, but
do you think he'll, I don't know if I want to say the name of it on this
show. I know what you're gonna say. How about we find the middle ground though and say David, go on Chapo.
But, yeah, sure.
I mean, again, he's, I think this show is kind of, we mean, we know where Frost stands politically, but I think I get the impression there's a bit of a leftist perspective to this show, too, from Lynch. Yeah. But I mean, if we want to talk about the structure again, we are about to head into technically, if you want to think of it in conventional structural terms, the third act, something that I felt really, the second we saw Diane literally zoom in on Twin Peaks through Google Maps.
No, absolutely. I mean, again, it's part of the disjunctive quality of not just the episode itself, but the way that a lot of the show is playing is that it, a lot of the scenes have the quality of a turning point to them. It's Diane looking at the map. It's Truman talking to Benjamin Horn, it's the conversation between Albert and Gordon Cole. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, perhaps
we had Blue Rose explained in this episode too.
Yes,
I will say when Albert brought up UFOs, I was for a second scared they were going to reference the Nixon scene in The Secret History of Twin Peaks. I was like, oh, please don't go there. Don't be the king of the crystal skull.
Right, yeah. I actually forgot that Blue Rose is explained. And I got to say, I had my qualms with the revelation, not revelation, but the insinuation of, I keep saying that word on this episode because I feel like that's really appropriate for this particular episode of Twin Peaks. The insinuation of what Laura Palmer might be in sort of a grander cosmic sense from the eighth episode, I had hesitations about. But this I didn't mind at all. I it's kind of what I suspected to begin with, and it doesn't really feel like such a big deal that it's revealed. I don't know how either of you feel.
I feel like he was just stating something that we all thought obvious to begin with.
Well, I don't know why. Maybe this makes me whenever there's an original Angelo Badalamenti music cue, at least from what I could tell, over a scene, for some reason that always signals itself as important. And in an odd way, how I at least read that scene was now Tammy being doomed to something. I don't know about you.
Possibly. I mean, I thought about when I was over at the place, you know, where I'm watching these episodes, the previous week's episode was on, and I was thinking about what you said, Ethan, about how you get the sense that these threads are leading to a dark place, and that there's kind of, maybe we're starting to go off a cliff in terms of, you know, actual incident. And I don't know, I wonder if this episode reinforced that for you at all. It seems like it did, but
how amazing. Willa?
Yeah, I think that we are heading towards darker material on Twin Peaks. I mean, I don't think there's any other reason why we would have been reintroduced to Sarah. I mean, if that was the case.
Mm-hmm. How, I mean, I was thinking about this today too. How actually amazing would it be if this ended on a cliffhanger akin to the final episode of the original run?
Yeah, that would make me very happy.
Which I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm getting that feeling.
I'm actually just not going to make a guess. I was going to say I myself am not, but what does that really mean in the case of this particular show? I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, we only have a handful of episodes left, and it seems like there's a lot that could still be resolved, and knowing David Lynch, he's not going to resolve all of it.
Oh yeah, I have no doubt that not all of it will be resolved. I mean,
yeah,
there are certain things. I mean, the whole Richard Horn plotline definitely feels as though it's heading towards a destination. It feels like it's heading towards a point, let's say. But that's the only one that really stands out. I guess. Yeah, sure. I guess Cooper will end up back in Twin Peaks, but I mean, we saw him. Oh yeah, we didn't even bring him up. We saw him for one scene. We saw him for a single shot in this episode, which I thought was great. I wish we had more of that. Yeah, that's exactly what would happen when he tries to play catch, isn't it?
Well, do you think that's almost something that maybe was in an earlier episode and then they cut it out and put it in here so that they could still have starring Kyle MacLachlan at the end?
Yes, I absolutely think so. I had the exact same thought. Because Lynch has been open in saying that certain scenes were rearranged in the editing room just as it was going along. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's... Well, no, actually, I'm going to correct myself. I think there is a thematic connection with something that happens in this episode. However, yes, it could very well be taken from it. But it does relate directly to the prison warden gets assassinated. Forgot about that. With Tim Roth and Jennifer Jason Leigh, I guess, sort of in a weird second spin on the Hateful Eight or something, like the Dahmer Goo gang from that film it's sort of like the Twin Peaks version of that, which, great. They assassinate the prison warden in what I thought was a very nice scene. I like the sort of cut-off quality of that, as Ethan said, kind of the sense of a scene fragment more than anything else.
I mean, and then they went to Wendy's.
Yeah. And then they went to Wendy's, yes.
Great restaurant.
It is interesting, though, because something I thought about in this scene is that it doesn't feel like it's often in Twin Peaks we get such flashes of horror with regards to the little boy running outside and finding his father shot dead, which I actually found very upsetting just because it was such a quick thing. And it was interesting because if you think about it, really, Peaks tends to distend its trauma, and it tends to dwell on it in a way that is uncommon for a lot of American arts generally, but particularly American television in 2017. I mean, even the sequence where the little boy gets run over by Richard Horn, which maybe you could say this is almost a mirror to, in a way. Maybe. Mm-hmm. That's something that's a whole chunk of the show, really, from when Harry Dean Stanton first shows up to when the soul goes into the power lines or something. This was so fast, and there's something about it that I thought underlined kind of Alpha Coop and his way of being, how little of his terror we've actually seen, in a way. Because we see him at this point where his entire world is kind of crumbling around him, and he's doing what he can to seize control of it. And this is kind of him getting that back. I like that little window into him as a crime figure.
I mean, when you think about it, a good portion of his screen time is him, like, texting.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really seen him much in the past couple weeks, have we?
No.
I don't know. I thought that scene was very well measured. Also, the great shot of Tim Roth's eye blown up through the scope. Weirdly enough, it made me think of one of my favorite shots in Martin Scorsese's Kundun, when the Dalai Lama is looking through a telescope. And, I mean, hey, you know, both of them practice TM, so I think there's some overlap there. But
well, I kind of wanted to go back to the Roadhouse scene at the end, in that, I don't know, maybe this is reading too much into it, but in terms of talking about scenes being rearranged and whatnot, do you think that the fact that there's been a few repeating musical guests, we saw Au Revoir Simone repeat a few weeks ago, now we see Chromatics reappear, do you think there's almost this idea that the Roadhouse scenes are not chronological? That scene we see at the end is the same night as the James Has Always Been Cool scene, for example, and the Roadhouse is just being treated as sort of this metaphysical space where we check in on the residents of Twin Peaks, but, I mean, in terms of the residents, people will only see in one scene. I mean, kind of thinking of this Sky Ferreira scene a few weeks ago to kind of get the sense again of further kind of social decay, social and economic, I guess, decay in the town and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. I like that reading of it. Sure. I mean, it strikes me to go back to this idea as the kind of thing that will have a very different quality when you eventually watch this as a more continuous thing without the end credits in those segments. And yeah, returning to a particular musician might give it a bit more of a hypnotic feeling. It's possible. I mean, I wonder if Richard Horne's first appearance would kind of belie that idea, but who knows where that... Sure. I like the idea.
Though, do you think this was a theory I was reading, sir? We always have to bring up theories we find on Reddit or other forums, that Scott Coffey, we should mention, Lynch regular Scott Coffey, never given usually the leading role, always the guy who just shows up for 5 minutes in a David Lynch movie, appears in that scene. He mentions he was ran off the road by someone. He said it was two beaming headlights. Do you think that may have been Bad Coop, Alpha Coop, the person who ran him off the road as he's driving back to Twin Peaks?
It's possible, yeah, sure.
What do you mean?
I thought you were going to say Bill Pullman at the end of Lost Highway. And
Say they take place in the same universe.
Did he say that? Because I read that on Wikipedia, like, years ago, but there's no... I think I know what you're talking about, and I think in Lynch on Lynch, the Chris Rodley book, he actually said something along the lines of they exist in the same headspace for him, spiritually. I don't know. I have my copy. I'm tempted to go grab it and just look this up, but I don't know.
This is the part of this show where I bring up a theory and it brings everything to a halt.
Right, right. I have started looking at the Twin Peaks Reddit, and it's dumb. It's really not.
I thought you were going to say, when you said the D, I thought it was going to lead into deep.
No. It's really stupid. There's like some things that are brought up. Willow, have you been on the Twin Peaks Reddit forum at all?
I don't frequent Reddit, if that's surprising to you guys.
No. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to give anybody the impression that I frequent Reddit. I did a Google search for Twin Peaks Reddit. I was, you know, I was just kind of bored one night, and it's just kind of a lot of people, like, just saying, yeah, I'm really liking the show. But, you know, fan theories can be fun.
Yeah, the thing about Twin Peaks and theories is I think you could make a theory on just about anything because there's so much left resolved and you could still sound somewhat credible.
I mean, do we have any closing thoughts on this episode? Or hour, I should say?
Yeah, it's not the strongest hour, but I will say, A, I liked it. Also, not to straw man here, you know, not to send him up to knock him down too much, but a lesser hour of this is much, much better than, like, anything else on TV. I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't really want to say it, but I couldn't help but think it, just in terms of, you know, as Bret Easton Ellis would say, films are about mood and atmosphere, right? And this is an episode with mood and atmosphere.
Sorry, I'm going to put my money on the table here. I'm going to predict that Bret Easton Ellis hates Twin Peaks Return. That's just my prediction.
No, it's possible. Yeah, I mean, I...
Because whenever something actually is about mood and atmosphere, he says, it needed a script. It needed structure.
American cinema of the 70s. Sorry.
Sorry,
you're being subjected to our bullshit firsthand. But anyway, yeah, no, I thought it was a good episode, and if it's a turning point, fine.
I thought it was a good episode. I don't know if many people would agree with me in saying that it's like one of the better episodes, but the one thing that I know is that on a personal level, some of the things that happened in that episode are going to stick with me for a long time. Specifically, the things that took place in the scenes involving Sarah Palmer. Like, that stuff is, like, more harrowing to me, and it, like, struck such a deep chord that, like, nothing else really even comes close to, for me, like, watching TV or movies right now, especially not TV. And, like, I don't know. I do think we're getting ready to hit a turning point. Like, we're coming into the close of the show. And I think if there's any sort of dissatisfaction with the current Twin Peaks, I think that it lies in part with, like, it not jumping to that conclusion quickly enough for them. I think everyone is sort of collectively worried that, like, when this is over with, we're going to be saying, that's it, I want more. Which I think is very plausible, but, like, I also think that criticism is sort of, like, I think we need to wait a bit before we make any grand gestures about, like, the quality from episode to episode, because this is a very hard subject to talk about on a week-by-week basis. I'm sure that you two, like, go through that each week, like, struggling to put the pieces together in a way that's satisfying. As a singular hour-long piece of television, there was some stuff in this that I experienced watching it that I haven't really experienced previously in other movies or other television shows, and I'll be thankful for having that feeling each week with Twin Peaks, and that's happened more often than not this season.
I mean, I know I said this was not one of my favorite episodes so far, but good Lord, will I miss this episode. I mean, when this show is over, I'm going to miss even just the feeling of sitting down Sundays, 9 Eastern Standard Time on Crave TV to watch this. So well, I mean, to wrap it up, Willow, thank you for joining us, but before we go, Willow, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me, you can find my writing on The Film Stage, The Village Voice, Ebert Voices, or my own website, Curtsies and Hand Grenades.
Nick, what about you?
Well, quickly, I'll say, Willow recently had a great piece for us on the films of Yvonne Rainer.
Yeah.
I would suggest people check that out.
Thank you.
Yes, no, well, thank you for writing it. For my own part, thefilmstage.com, twitter.com/Nick_Newman, and various real world doings with Grasshopper Film.
And you can find me on twitter.com/EthanVess, and possibly another Twitter account I'll have to start for my new job. So there's that. But again, thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Baby, someone is stealing you.